There come wintry episodes in the course of a snow-battered lifetime that can place us deep in the shadows. If the shadow is dark enough, we may not feel able to move forward, for our foresight and insight and eyesight are so limited. We may become frozen or snowed in. You may have known this condition of confusion or disorientation, ennui or acedia, and you may know it still. The death of a loved one can bring such a feeling. The loss of a position or job can bring such a feeling. The recognition of a major life mistake can bring such a feeling. The recollection of a past loss can bring such a feeling. The disappearance of a once radiant affection or love for a person or a cause or an institution can bring such a feeling. The senselessness of violence inflicted on the innocent can bring such a feeling. Over the years, I have grown frustrated by my own mother tongue in various ways. English places such a fence between thought and feeling when real thought is almost always deeply felt and real feeling is almost always keenly thought. Perhaps we need another word like thought feeling or felt thought. When Charles Wesley sang, "Unite the pair so long disjoined, knowledge and vital piety, learning and holiness combine, and truth and love let us all see," he described something so bone marrow close to our own life and happiness, hope, service, and faith. And he also, I think, was wrestling with the limits of our own inherited beautiful language, our mother tongue. You, by nature and discipline, in any case, together, you live the thought-feeling gospel, and for that I am lastingly thankful. Be it then thought or feeling or thought feeling, there do come episodes all in a lifetime that place us, if not in the dark, at least well into the shadows. You may have known all about this at one time, and you may know it still. And so come Sunday, some snippet of song or verse or preachment or prayer or, especially today, a line from a cantata, it may be, will touch you as you meander about in the dim shadow twilight. Hold on to that. Hold on to that snippet. Follow its contours along the cave of darkness in which you may now move. Let that snippet, that song, verse, sermon, prayer, line, let it guide you along so you may be able to murmur with the psalmist today, "I can do this. I can do it. I can make my way. I can find a handhold or a foothold. I can hope and I can even trust that the Lord heals the brokenhearted. I can make it for now, today. At least for now, for the time being." Dearly beloved, it is the power and the role of beauty, verbal or musical or liturgical or communal, to restore us to our rightful mind, our right thought feeling. Today, the epistle and the gospel, and especially the psalm, lift a hymn of faith, a song of courage in the face of adversity. It is this lift for living which beauty, especially the beauty of holiness, and particularly this morning, the beauty of holy music, is meant to provide you, to offer you. Here we want to underscore truth for sure and goodness for sure, but we don't want to leave beauty behind. For beauty can heal. Beauty can heal. In our work with demons, in our quiet, in our contemplation, beauty, in the case of this morning, the beauty of Bach, often has the power to shake us loose, to set us free. How happy I am that my precious one is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He will claim me as his prize and take me to paradise, for which I clap my hands. Amen, amen. Come, you lovely crown of joy, do not delay. I await you with longing. Dr. Jarrett, how shall we listen both on the radio and in person this morning, most fully to be immersed in today's Bach experience?
Today's gospel lesson has to do with Christ's ministry on the earth, and it has to do with traveling and sharing news and bringing a message. Our cantata is about the Annunciation of Mary and Gabriel's message to her that she will bear a son, and that that son will become king, God's son, Jesus. Wie schön leuchtet der Morgenstern, the name of today's cantata, how brightly shines the morning star, for most people by tradition is an Epiphany hymn. We're in the fifth Sunday after Epiphany. For Bach, this cantata was written for the Feast of the Annunciation, which when he wrote it in 1725, happened to coincide also with Palm Sunday. So we have all kinds of liturgical conflicts arriving around this text. We have Epiphany by name, the invocation of the morning star, the brightness of the morning star. We have the foretelling of the birth of Christ with the Annunciation. So we have an anticipation context or an Advent context. We also have the fact that it was written for Palm Sunday, Christ's victorious entrance into Jerusalem as king under the branches of palms. So here we are, February 8th, snowy outside, with an Annunciation, perhaps Advent, perhaps Palm Sunday, whatever you like. It's a bright star day for us at Marsh Chapel. The story of the Annunciation comes from the first chapter of Luke, when God's messenger, the angel Gabriel, reveals to Mary that she will bear a son. Mary rejoices, and she goes to visit her cousin Elizabeth, who also is great with child. And at Mary's news, if you recall from Luke chapter 1, the baby leaps in Elizabeth's womb. It's a wonderful image, and it causes Elizabeth to utter the text that will become our Ave Maria, or our Hail Mary, to which Mary responds with a Magnificat, Mary's song. All of this in a quick succession of verses in the first chapter of Luke. Our cantata today tries to capture all of the joy of that message and the joy of that moment. There's no great theological polemic that Bach tries to communicate in the course of this text. And as his text, he uses one of the most famous and beloved of the Protestant hymns, Philipp Nicolai's Wie schön leuchtet der Morgenstern, written in 1599. There's seven verses in Nicolai's hymn, and Bach uses the first and the last in the first movement and then the final movement of the cantata, and then paraphrases the inner verses for the text of the inner movements of the cantata. And in each of our six movements, we have a sense of that joy of the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, and the promise of salvation in paradise made possible through the birth of Christ and God revealing himself to us in the world. Bach, to celebrate this moment, chooses a festive and rich orchestration and instrumentation. So you'll listen for, along with our chorus, the Marsh Chapel Choir, you'll listen in the instruments for the usual complement of strings and continuo, but six soloists grouped in three pairs. From the highest voice, two solo violins, and then in the alto register, two solo horns, and then in the tenor register, two solo oboes. They're tenor oboes. Bach called them oboes da caccia. And the modern instrument equivalent would be an English horn, so you'll hear two English horns this morning. And those three groups of instruments playing solos, duets in pairs, combined with the full orchestral texture of the string continuo, and then the four parts of the chorus. It's a marvelously rich instrumental texture created from beginning to end with Bach. Well, listen for those instruments as Bach deploys them. Listen also for dance rhythms. The first movement is in 12/8 compound meter, and there's a wonderful lilt to the texture of the music as it proceeds, and that is mirrored in the final aria, number 5, sung by tenor soloist Ethan Dupuis today. You'll hear the dance rhythms played by the strings, the soloist, and the string section in that solo. The first solo is sung by Emily Culler, soprano Emily Culler, and you can imagine that she is singing as the voice of Mary or Elizabeth as she talks about being filled by the Spirit, by the flame of the Spirit, and the longing created by the presence of the Spirit. Her aria, listen for her melismas on those two words, Flammen and Verlangen, flames and longing. Her aria is accompanied by one of those oboes, those tenor oboes, and then the continuo group. But the continuo group is told, requested by Bach to play pizzicato, meaning plucked, not bowed. So that adds another very special, particular texture to the music and contributes to the joyful affect of that text and Emily's solo. The final movement of the cantata is a standard four-part setting, as you might expect, of Nicolai's last movement. But Bach can't resist the moment to crown the musical joy with a very special part for the second horn. So listen out for the second horn in the final chorale. From beginning to end, this is one of the most joyful celebration cantatas that I can think of. Written pretty early in Bach's career in Leipzig. This was first performed in March of 1725, and just 5 days later, his musicians performed the second version of the St. John Passion. So it's humbling to imagine the kind and quality of musicians that Bach had making music with him and that he was writing music for. The music expresses a kind of joy that, to my ear at least, and to maybe some listeners today, will call to mind the Christmas Oratorio and its straightforward confidence of joy and celebration. Thank you.
We recognize in the reading and hearing of the gospel, and now in a moment in the communal enjoyment of the beauty of this music, that we are the recipients and stewards of the grace of God which brings healing. We also know in our direct experience that often what we can do involves one individual. The texts from Mark, beginning earlier in the year and continuing through today, picture Jesus almost exclusively dealing one by one with a person, a man or woman in particular need. Somewhere in the sound of our instruments and voices, there may be one such who is listening with a special interest, a special longing, and a special need. And in that case, and for that one, thinking now together for that one person, we offer as a means of grace the liturgy and the music today and the homily of the voice of Marsh Chapel. We celebrate together in joy how happy I am that my precious one is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He will claim me as his prize and take me to paradise, for which I clap my hands. Amen and amen. Come, you lovely crown of joy, do not delay. I await you with longing. Amen.